welcome to Brits on Pole at Large, our first podcast in which we talk about the day we spent at the recent Goodwood Festival of Speed. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Andy. For those who don't know the Festival of Speed, this three-day event is one of the most popular dates in the British motorsport calendar and takes place in the grounds of Goodwood House in Sussex. It features all kinds of historic and modern racing cars and motorbikes from all eras of the sport.
This was our first visit to the festival, so we decided to go on the Friday, which is free practice day, to get our bearings and to find out what Goodwood is all about. That meant we missed some of the stars, such as Lewis Hamilton and Jenson Button, but there was still plenty to see, do and hear.
So this podcast covers our whole day, beginning on the famous hill climb, where historic cars and bikes are put through their paces, heading on to the Forest Rally stage and paddock, and then down to the Formula One paddock. Finally, we interview one of the biggest names in F1 blogging.
So keep listening to find out how we got on. We're watching the hill climb stage, and it's time for historic F1 cars, and we're watching some very old machinery get into gear to find its way up this quite incredible slope, actually. I would be very interested to see how one car deals with its slope. A big theme of this year's festival will be Sir Frank Williams' 40 years in motorsport. It turns out that he's been racing in F1 for more years than I've been alive. The noise you've just heard is David Coulthard driving a truly historic bullet-shaped silver, very, very old F1 car. Here he comes round again. One of the most amazing things about it is, which we can't really communicate by audio, it's the most incredible smell of hot brakes and hot engines as the cars are coming past us. It's a tarmac track banked up on either side by hay bales. As you can hear, the cars are really having to make a tremendous run-up in order to get themselves in the right position to take the hill. As usual with any motor racing event, we've got a fairly limited section of the track that we're viewing. We've got perhaps 400 metres of track that we can see. But we have a big screen which shows us the entire track. And at the moment, DC is parked up. His vintage car is parked up.
If you look really, really carefully, you can see Kazuki Nakajima just jump out in front of him briefly.
Yes, Nakajima here is part of the Williams contingent, was hiding in the hay bales. These are not vehicles that require a team of 8 mechanics to start. These are harking back to the days when you could fix any mechanical problem on your car with a rubber band and a paperclip. Clearly that's not to denigrate the technical experience of the people that actually do it, but these are seriously vintage vehicles, and presumably having to repair them on the fly is all part of the day's experience. Currently watching David Brabham in a fine British Racing Green vehicle, which was apparently his father's world championship car. Now, David Brabham is an honorary Brits on Pole driver. He does race under the Australian flag in sports cars, but he was born in London, so we count David Brabham as one of ours. Of course, to say that in an Ashes year is quite controversial. We've just watched a little vehicle go by that has a four-cylinder firing engine on the back, which reminds us of nothing so much as an engine mounted on a skateboard. Things are now getting a little bit more modern. Watching the big screen, we can see a very familiar Benetton, the Benetton driven by Michael Schumacher and Martin Brundle, yellow and green camel sponsorship, wiggling about to warm its tyres up, which is a great sight to see. And we can really hear the engine for this one coming from some way off. Really looking forward to catching sight of this one. And here she is. Of course, it's our first visit to Goodwood, so it's the first time that we've seen this track in action, although it's very familiar from TV pictures and videos. So we're very much finding our feet. Today is Friday, free practice day, which we thought would be the easiest place to navigate. That looks like our first classic Williams, and again, less of a smell of hot engine now, but a tremendous smell of fuel. This is something that I always particularly enjoy about live motorsport that you never get a sense of when watching TV pictures is, especially on something like this hill climb stage, the noise of the car as it changes gear. You get the percussive noise. As the car comes to the top of the hill climb and then takes the turn, you can hear the percussive noise of it changing down through the gears. There we have a very, very highly coloured bit, and it's in shades of red, yellow, green and blue. Wouldn't look out of place on any 80s high street, that one. The session we're watching at the moment is of course free practice, which means the drivers aren't feeling their way into the circuit. That means that where we're standing at the moment, which is about halfway up the hill climb stage, we're not seeing people come through on one line. Obviously there's a fairly wide variety of different vehicles and different vintages of vehicles. Bruno Senna in a McLaren Honda. Another thing that strikes me very powerfully, having been at Silverstone a week or two ago and having to use quite serious ear protection, even for free practice, I'm standing here completely untroubled, suggests the slight discrepancy in power that we may be seeing.
For me, what's striking me is just the sheer nostalgia here. The old liveries, half-forgotten ones from TV broadcasts, Murray Walker screaming out the television speakers as a kid, and Scuderia's catalogue. So many cars have come through that I just looked familiar just from seeing them in a local toy shop.
It is very much like a return to childhood, and it does powerfully explain the appeal of this event. You can hear the modern era advancing upon us. We're shortly going to be watching Williams tester Nico Hülkenberg come round in one of the older cars. Here he is. It's very odd to see familiar helmets from current F1 on the older cars, DC Sultire especially.
All the cars that run through, by far the most hesitant drive, the one who's sputtered most, gone up most slowly up the hill here, has been Bruno Senna. Now, whether that's because he's just actually not all that good, or whether because he wanted to put on a show so that people could see the car, or whether he was just kind of nervous driving the car that he was driving, I don't know. But, you know, someone like Nico Hülkenberg has gone hacking through, and he barely seen him pass. McLaren Honda just kind of crawled through, stuttered even.
One of the ultimate nostalgia hits of F1 is seeing the John Player special branding black and gold. The car bearing that has sadly just been pushed to the side of the road, so I'm not sure whether we're going to see that in person just now. Here we have another classic Williams. It's the blue, white and gold Rothman sponsorship. Again, a great nostalgia blast for any of us that are old enough to remember these cars racing. Around comes the safety car, around comes the F1 safety car with its hazards flashing. Ford turns out to have been driving a Mercedes 154. He's saying that it's terrifying to be sitting in a car of that vintage so close to the fuel tank. We all know about Jackie Stewart's accident where he ended up based from the waist down in fuel after a crash. DC's commenting how something that seems so terribly incongruous and old-fashioned to us was the cutting edge of technology in its day. He's saying although there's a lot of bulk on the Mercedes 154 that he's driving, it's the width of the car is the crucial thing. Again, his Red Bull overalls and his Red Bull helmet look very strange behind the wheel of that vehicle. DC is saying that as far as he's concerned, Formula One has come home. Going back to the BBC, he grew up watching BBC F1 broadcasts. Well, he would say that, wouldn't he? David Brabham is talking about his Le Mans win.
A couple of weeks later, here at Goodwood, which is always a fantastic event, and get a rare opportunity to drive a car in my father's era. This Cooper apparently was Bruce McLaren's, a very similar car to what my father won the World Championship 50 years ago, and that's what we're celebrating here today. That doesn't feel like it's very safe compared to the cars we're in, but it's timeless, isn't it? I mean, it's just a beautiful piece. The T51 won the World Championship, and then the next model also won the World Championship with Dad in 1960. So, you know, this was very much part of a big change in Formula One. We have the winning Peugeot that we won this year with, the 908. So that's obviously a lot of British people go to Le Mans and the opportunity for them to see the car again and others that didn't make it. So, yeah, it's great to represent Peugeot here as well.
Bruno Senna is talking about driving his uncle's McLaren Honda.
It's so much power. It's actually quite hard to put the power down, especially here where the road is very crowned. So treat it nicely and try to make sure that it will do the 3 days and be always in good shape. You're supposed not to destroy the tires, so I think you can drive it pretty hard. I think the 1993 car is one of my favorites as well. It seems to be quite a nice car. so maybe one day I'll get the opportunity to drive that as well.
David Brown didn't find the need to wear a crash helmet. He was in fact driving around in a baseball cap. It's with mixed feelings that we watch Bruno Senna driving in Senna's McLaren. There is a strong resemblance, a strong facial resemblance, and I find it quite unfortunate that young man is going to spend his entire career being overshadowed by his uncle. You may say that the reward he gets for having the surname is more than enough to justify the attention he gets. Given what happened to Ayrton Senna, I hope the shadow lifts from Bruno Senna and that he doesn't have to spend the whole of every interview he does from now until 2020 explaining about his uncle. Nico Hülkenberg is explaining in his interview that he's quite overwhelmed that so many people have turned out to see the historic Williams. Once again, on the back of having been at Silverstone a couple of weeks ago, that's British Motorsport for you. Having watched the historic F1 cars, there is action on this track for the entire day, and we could probably quite happily stand here and be petrolheads for the entire day going, "Oh, look, isn't that gorgeous?" But we feel obliged really to walk about a bit. So our next plan is to walk up to the Forest Rally stage and see what action is taking place up there. The post-demonstration commentary is letting us know that Adrian Newey had got behind the wheel of Damon Hill's race-winning car, so it's good to know he can turn his hand to anything. Cars are all now coming back down the hill climb stage in formation, which is, as you can pretty well visualise, absolutely wonderful sight. The drivers are waving. It's interesting as they come back the other way along the course, you can hear a totally different engine note from the cars, totally different demands on the car. As you can hear, the cars are almost cruising. They're almost... Now we're seeing enticing shots of the classic rally cars taking on the Forest stage. I'm very keen to see that. I'm proud owners of many scale strip cars that are done up in the classic rally kit. We want to see if we can spot any of our friends made large. One of the people that is appearing today is Alistair McRae, brother of Colin McRae. We're watching shots of him sending the back of his car around in a big loop at the moment. Even if you visit a racetrack, you're looking through the wire fence, you're watching across 10 or 20 feet of gravel runoff. You're looking over the heads of marshals here. The shooting's out in force, but we are close enough to touch. Compared to the vast distance and restrictions on the public going anywhere near the drivers or the cars that you get in an F1 event.
I would say it makes it difficult to follow, but it's something that makes you have to shift the gears in your brain quite often, because suddenly you're looking at a classic historic Williams and you're thinking back to you remember from it at the time, and somebody says that it's being driven by Nico Hülkenberg, or it's being driven by Adrian Newey. Hang on a minute, Adrian Newey has a driving license. I suppose that's part of what makes it special.
We've just watched one of the famous racing Beetles, a rallying Beetle and American monster trucks, of which the less said the better, frankly. And that was our first glimpse of a NASCAR racer. Little orange light on the top with a Luton phone number. And here we are at the Forest Rally stage. We've walked for about 10 to 15 minutes from the hill climb stage where we were watching the Formula One cars. There is a fleet of tractors shuffling people up the hill, still being comparatively young and fit, we've walked. While with Brits on pole, we do tend to concentrate on open wheel racing. We are big fans of rallying, fans of Subaru. Oh, classic Lancia heaven. And very famous Scandinavians losing the back ends of their cars in controlled fashion. Up in quite dense woodland now. On one side of us, we've got the hill climb track still going on. The track marks out with hay bales, but looking the other way, there's a fence, and then the off-road rally stage is in a heavy forest. The weather's a bit too nice to imagine that we're viewing the Rally of Finland today, but it's quite evocative. That's our first sight of a Porsche driven in anger today. We've just seen something that would have justified the entrance fee alone, which is the Richard Burns Subaru Impreza, the iconic Subaru rally car, easily worth a 3-hour drive to Sussex to say. Whoa, and there goes the back end. Whoa, just whizzing past us is the most lovely yellow and white Vauxhall Chevette rally car. At the moment, we're standing just outside the Hillclimb paddock watching the NASCAR and the touring cars all queue up waiting to go back down.
And you do really get a good sense of just a different racing culture. Just the livery and the branding is very much more in your face compared with the European ones. Great steering numbers, great brush colours, and it is a whole different world. You know, there's still races, and we sneer a bit about NASCAR, but similar is bigger than what's different.
We're up in the paddock at the top of the hill climb, and it's petrolhead heaven. All around me are parked under awnings the most wonderful selection of vintage rally cars that you've ever seen. I can see BMWs, Lancers, a whole rank of Subarus. Lovely little Vauxhall Chevette that we saw on the rally stage itself. Many people of our age learned to drive and had that as their first car. Looking at a Porsche Rothmans branding, people are strolling around, touching them, taking photos, peering into the interiors. I actually got to put my hand on the bonnet of the 1995 Impreza and it was still warm. It's hard to see how you can get closer to motorsport than we are at the moment. This is one thing that we very much enjoy about both rallying and touring cars, I think. While open wheel racing is a wonderful, purest thing, it's very possible to imagine you are driving in a touring car or a rally car. It's possible to extrapolate from your driving experience to the driving experience you would have in a race car.
It's absolutely brilliant to see these cars, which once again, like in the F1 cars from the 70s, so redolent of my younger years, the Scalextric sets, Matchbox cars, especially see the rally versions, and massive banks of headlights. This is worth doing. This is definitely worth doing.
And like the earlier F1 stage, it's not just the sight of the cars travelling very fast somewhere away from you. We're also able to smell the petrol, smell the brakes, get up close and touch them. We're able to hear the mechanics and the owners talking about them.
The paddock is completely open. You can go out of the cars, post some photos with them. One or two of them have got their bonnets open so you can appear at the engines. There are racing drivers around and people who've their careers in it, but also most of these cars are now owned by enthusiasts, people in owners' clubs. And we've really got the crossover here where the dedicated amateur and the semi-professional borders them just cross, and it gives the place a really nice atmosphere, a real friendliness.
As you'll be able to hear from that, we are looking at the modern Formula One cars. We're looking at a Toyota, Red Bull and a Ferrari. A huge crowd has gathered to see this. Immediately, the first thing that strikes you is, whoa, the noise, and stand right back from the noise.
Nice to see David Coulthard earn his appearance. He's up there, obviously, having driven the Red Bull up.
We're now sprinting very quickly from the paddock back towards the hill climb stage in the hopes of catching the F1 cars on the way down. The Ferrari going back down the hill climb stage. We can see the air intake with the barcode branding just whizzing between the hay bales. That's the Toyota. And that was DC. We just saw his Red Bull Sharks fin go past right behind the wheel of that Red Bull. Just a little flash of his famous salt eye helmet went past them. And that was the McLaren. Again, I think we've become very aware that having come here from Silverstone 2 weeks ago, those F1 cars are operating at a fraction of the power they would be in a testing or a qualifying or a racing situation. Not that it's not an incredible treat to see them nonetheless. We're just walking past the rally stage on our way back down to the Formula One paddock. Somebody who we think is Marcus Grönholm has just gone barreling past in a modern rally car. Incredible, the amount of movement as it jigs around backwards and forwards on the track. Incredibly tightly controlled. And just as it shot past us and cornered just up ahead of us, we are watching the bottom strike sparks off the stones on the off-road course. Here we you've been listening to the sound of sports car prototypes, mainly Porsches, described by the commentators as not so much a car you sit in and sit on. It is actually a testament to the flat nature of these sports car prototypes that we can see even less of the drivers over the hay bales than we could with an F1 car. We are down to helmets and air, just shooting by at immense speed.
All we're really seeing is the hay bales is a Martini logo.
And a huge cloud of dust, don't forget that. That was it going past. Anthony Davidson's 007 Aston Martin entry into this year's Le Mans. It's incredibly small. Well, I think we were as relieved as anyone else at the prospect of F1 not splitting. There are things about the deal that's been made that do leave you with room for regret, I think. One of the things I would have loved to have seen would have been Ferrari to get back involved with sports car racing. David Brabham in this year's Le Mans winning Peugeot just whizzing past us there. We're struck by the extremely small size of that car. Absolutely thrilling to see both having followed their progress through the race. We're just on our way to the F1 paddock now, having walked back past the hill climb stage. We're looking at the supercars. Absolute sweetheart of a little Lotus. I think it's Nidalee, done up in racing trim. What really catches my eye looking down this rather motley parade here is a Tesla Roadster. Probably going to be the future of supercars because they're making electric sports cars. Very interesting area. Apparently the driving technique required for performance driving in an electric car is completely different from a petrol or a diesel car. Performance drivers are going to have to relearn quite a lot of their skills in order to corner and to harness the power to get the same kind of performance. Given the work Tesla's doing in this area, having a close-up look at that little roadster is possibly the most interesting thing I'm seeing in front of me now. We're walking down in front of the main grandstand section now because this is our first visit to Goodwood, and it's essentially a fact-finding mission. We didn't get grandstand tickets. Looking at it, I have to say that would probably be worth the premium, especially on a hot day. We're just about to cross over the bridge into the Formula One paddock now. I have to say it's considerably calmer experience than trying to cross the track at Silverstone. We just wandered into the F1 paddock, had a bit of a sit down and breathing under the trees, which was very pleasant. We're looking at some rather familiar lorries. I'm not sure the motorhomes are here, but the transporters are here. We can see the Ferrari and the Toyota transporters from where we are at the moment. Another nice thing that happened during our break, we exchanged a couple of text messages with Keith Collentine from F1 Fanatic. We're hoping we might meet up with him and just say hello. But for the time being, we're going to explore the paddock and see what there is to offer. There's a fine collection of Porsche and Audi sports cars from the 70s, and across the way we have classic Graham Hill, Jim Clark era Formula One cars, beautiful things. So we're going to have a look around and see what there is to see. We're looking at the late 60s era Grand Prix cars, Indy cars. The really striking thing is the incredible tiny size of them. In length, smaller than your road car. In width, it's hard to see how a grown man could sit comfortably in one. Also scary, coming from somebody that drives a classic car with very little in the way of modern crash protection, something I think we're always very conscious of whenever we sit in it, is the complete lack of any kind of protection for the driver. By the time we get into the 70s, of course, the superstructures are starting to appear on the cockpit of the car. The whole design is far more boxy. The cars have quite clearly gone through a complete evolution. As you might imagine, this is the most popular area of the event so far, and it's the first place where the crowds have been really quite dense. General public are being allowed to climb all over them. You can step right up to the cars, look in the cockpit, photograph them to your heart's content, get closer than practically imaginable in a sport that thrives so greatly on restriction of access, on exclusivity. This is a completely different experience. But more thrilling is being able to see this year's Le Mans cars, Alec Manish's Audi, the Peugeot and the Aston. A month ago at most, these cars were actually out on the Le Mans track. We're now standing right outside the Ferrari transporter. The noise you've just heard are engineers working on the Toyota car. They have it in the garage, or what's acting as a garage for today, and they're all clustered around it, revving up the engine, testing the engine. There's a crowd of people craning through a little gap in the canvas tent that's serving as their garage, desperately trying to see what's going on. There is an element of, well, put a petrol head down among 300 cars. Where do you look next? We have to admit there's an element of car fatigue is setting in now. Having said that, we cannot walk by the Gene Hunter Audi Quattro that we're looking at. That was the sound of said Audi Quattro being manoeuvred out of its garage. Something like 15 years of Subaru rallying. Three classic cars, line astern, ranging from the 95 WRX through to the 2009 quotes Ford Focus unquotes model, with an Audi Le Mans car following up at the back. Huge crowd gathered around the Braun GP tent looking at the car, needless to say. No competition. Ferrari's got a very good showing. Red Bull, a decent crowd. McLaren really does have a very decent crowd gathered outside. People here are being drawn by the Senna McLaren, the McLaren Honda that we saw Bruno Senna driving earlier. Small children are being given the opportunity to impersonate Lewis Hamilton by sitting in the current car. Some might say it's quite hard to tell the difference. Patrick Williams are drawing a nice lot of attention. The sense is that perhaps more enthusiasts, more casual visitors, pitching up from McLaren and Brom. The sound of a tyre jack being applied to a McLaren in a demonstration of wheel changing. I have to say that if it was done like that during Grand Prix, there'd be time for a cup of coffee and a comfort break for the driver. It all feels a bit incongruous at the moment because we're basically stood on Lord March's front lawn, right in front of his house. We're looking up at his balcony where he's entertaining his guests, and we've succeeded in meeting up with Keith Gullentine from F1 Fanatic, which is one of the things we were hoping to do today. So Keith, what does Goodwood mean to you? What's today about for you?
Oh, I love Goodwood to bits. I've been coming here for 4 years now, and I just wish I started coming sooner. You have such a wonderful variety of cars to look at, you know, and obviously not just Formula 1. I mean, I love my Formula 1, but I also like touring cars and Le Mans and all the rest of it, and you can get really close and have a look at, you know, the rotary engine in the old Le Mans winning Mazda, or the W12 in that Life Formula 1 car that's running this year. So it's great, you really get up close. There's obviously a vast turnout here. I've just heard them saying it's a record turnout again this year, and I think it's brilliant. I'd love it to bits.
What's the most interesting thing that's happened to you today?
The interesting part of the day for me is actually just about to happen, because I've managed to blag myself a photographer's tabard, so I'm going to go right down to the start finish area and hopefully get lots of shots of the F1 cars as they come out, and hopefully we'll have those all on F1 Fanatic later on.
Superb, we'll look out for that. This is a very difficult question. As a petrol-headed person, today's been overwhelming, frankly, that there are so many cars to look at. What's your top pick?
I would say the wonderful, obscure, ancient and rubbish Life, but I really do get a buzz out of seeing that old McLaren Honda MP44. That's a very special car, you know, the most successful Formula 1 car ever over the course of a single season. Getting to see Bruno Senna in this morning was very cool, because he has driven it before, but I haven't seen him behind the wheel. And you've also got that Senna style helmet, which is quite spooky. And seeing Hamilton drive it on Sunday will be really interesting.
I actually felt a bit sorry for Bruno Senna in a way, almost standing in for his uncle. The day is going to have to come when he's going to come out of the shadow of Ayrton Senna and make a name for himself, and I hope he can do that soon, actually.
I see what you're saying, really. It's a concern that he's not in a racing seat anywhere this year, because he obviously wanted to get into DTM and that didn't happen. It's a shame he couldn't have had a fallback option in GP2 or something like that. Hopefully, if everything gets sorted out in F1 next year, we do end up having these three new teams for 2010, although that's all very up in the air at the moment. I would think he would be one of the top picks to get one of those seats, not just because he's a promising driver, but obviously the notability aspect of it is irresistible, I would think.
So, that's the story of our first visit to the Goodwood Festival of Speed. And what's our verdict? Well, as you can probably tell from the podcast, we enjoyed ourselves very much.
Would we recommend the visit? Undoubtedly, although it is quite a big commitment in time and money. If you don't live close to Sussex and want to attend all 3 days, you will need to stay in the area to get the maximum value from your tickets.
It's also worth taking a bit of time to look at the static exhibits, maybe making more than one visit to the F1 paddock, for example. There's simply so much to take in that you'll be well served taking your time and not wearing yourself out on the first day.
So those are our tips for surviving Goodwood. Thanks very much for listening, and we hope you'll continue to join us at BritsOnPole.com.
Or on Twitter, where our username is also BritsOnPole. Thanks again for listening, and cheerio from us both.
The music used in this podcast is entitled Just Nasty and is by Kevin MacLeod, released under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license. For more information, please visit Kevin's site, incompetech.com and creativecommons.org.